President Donald Trump's decision to declare Jerusalem the capital city of Israel, or to have the United States recognize it as such, is drawing both praise and words of caution from members of his own party. In a statement, Tennessee Senator Bob Corker applauded the president for, quote, making this a reality. Arizona's John McCain, however, warned that any change in U.S. posture towards its perception of the capital of Israel as Jerusalem must, quote, come along with comprehensive diplomatic strategies in coordination with regional partners.
Okay, so this was the big historic news out of Washington today. It's reverberating around the world. But there's other news out of Washington. A growing number of Democratic lawmakers, as many as 24, are calling on Minnesota Senator Al Franken to resign after another accuser stepped forward this morning to say Franken tried to forcibly kiss her in 2006 when he was a radio host. He's scheduled an announcement of his own tomorrow. There's also the budget. There's the Alabama vote. So let's convene our weekly Wednesday political roundtable. This week, Paris Denard, our Republican strategist. Hi, Paris.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello. And Anita Dunn, the Democratic strategist. Hi, Anita. Oh, well, while Anita gathers her thoughts, let's listen to a little of President Trump this afternoon.
When I came into office, I promised to look at the world's challenges with open eyes and very fresh thinking. We cannot solve our problems by making the same failed assumptions and repeating the same failed strategies of the past. Old challenges demand new approaches.
And Paris, as President Trump noted, there was a U.S. law drafted to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, but it's been waived by every president every 6 months since the mid-90s. President Trump waived it as well this week. And it's the idea is to let the peace talks decide the future of the city. So why then also make this announcement, this very provocative announcement about Jerusalem, you know, being the capital? Some are speculating it's to shore up his very conservative base. Evangelicals are the biggest supporters of this idea.
Well, I think that, you know, the Jerusalem Embassy Act of 1995 is a significant one because it was passed by overwhelming majorities in both the House and the Senate.
That's right.
And when you look at the president's record, he's talked about this on the campaign trail and has done what he said he was going to do now. And so I believe what he's doing is showing the world that he means what he says and says what he means, and he wants to have peace. Now, in past administrations, no fault of their own or anything that's negative, they decided to take up the peace process for Israel and Palestine towards the end of their terms in office. President Trump decided to do it at the beginning of his term in office, starting off with his first foreign trips to Saudi Arabia, to Israel, the Palestinian Authority, and all the other major religious centers like the Vatican and Rome. And so this is something that's important to him. So I think the timing is right, and I think he should get this done now. And it's going to help the process along because it's going to be a long process. But by doing this, you know, it took 22 years of saying that the building in Tel Aviv would actually help peace. But we've seen that for decades that has not happened.
But Anita, let me bring Anita in. Anita, others are pointing to that it hasn't brought peace to not, you know, sign that into law. So take that up.
So I think that if doing this would immediately produce peace, you wouldn't have a wide variety of people waving a red flag and saying, not now, very provocative, not a good idea. As your lead-in piece pointed out, not even the members of his own political party uniformly support this. And if you look at the wide array of voices, both those involved directly in the peace process and those people like the Pope who have raised concerns around the timing, and also the very provocative nature of this, it's hard to believe that it had to be done now. As Paris said, this is something the president wants to do now. It is, I think, indicative, though, of how he sees foreign policy, which is kind of his impulse as opposed to consult with allies, build coalitions, work towards solutions in a more comprehensive way. And I would only add that you look at the kind of week they're having and all of the turmoil everywhere, it often feels as though the president feels he just has to go out and kind of, you know, throw one more thing into the mix just to see how everybody reacts, just to see how things settle down at the end, you know, where the pieces all fall.
Well, can I just get a Paris to respond to something that you said, Anita? Because I was wondering the same thing, Paris. I mean, because clearly the president is very passionate about viewing this through the lens of the best interests of what he thinks is in the United States. Also, but a U.S.-Israel lens. And I'm wondering about whether or not he should be paying more attention to, you know, the reaction from the global community. I'm looking at a response from the German foreign minister, Sigmar Gabriel, who says that, you know, a solution to what he called the Jerusalem problem in terms of it being a source of conflict between Israel and Palestinians can only be found through direct negotiations between both parties. Everything which worsens this crisis is counterproductive. That seems to be how a lot of the global community sees this decision.
Well, we have to remember that the president is the president of the United States of America, not the president of the world. And so he has America, he has an America First agenda. And part of that agenda is doing what he believes is best. The American people voted him to be president to make the tough decisions. And this is one that he's making. But I think.
Oh, you know, I want to ask you about that, because I am curious what your answer would be. How is this in America's best interests?
Because it's in America's best interest, because you have people like Ahmadinejad who have said that their number one goal is to totally obliterate Israel. And if Israel falls and if Israel is collapsed and is destroyed, I bet you the American people understand that the U.S. is next. This is why the North Korean threat is so serious, because they are trying to intimidate us and put these ballistic missiles in the air to try to destroy America. So if we let Israel fall, our strongest ally, that is going to be an indicator that the U.S. can be next. And this is not a partisan issue. We can go back and countless examples. Senator Joe Biden, Cory Booker, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Andrew Cuomo, I mean, Chris Murphy, even President Obama have all come out and stated on the record that Jerusalem should be the capital of Israel. So this is not that provocative.
Well, Anita, I mean, respond to that. Because I haven't actually seen any Democrats coming out and saying this is a terrible decision.
Well, but what you haven't seen is anybody coming out and saying it must be done now, as opposed to being done in as part of a broader set of negotiations that do engage people. I want to address something Paris said, because I think that there is a real difference here between the unilateral actions of this president when it comes to this kind of foreign policy decision and precedents in the past. And I think the American people understand that unilateral actions, particularly in such an extraordinarily fragile part of the world, can often lead to unintended consequences or very bad consequences that aren't necessarily in the interests of the United States. So I would say that I think that in general, this idea has had support, but it's always had support as part of those direct negotiations, as part of a solution that is broader than just unilaterally acting like this in the face of warnings from our allies and from the direct parties to the negotiations.
Well, you know, we could talk about this the entire segment, because it's such a huge topic, and we'll come back to it, I'm sure. But I just want to address some of the other things that happened today. Anita, should Al Franken resign?
Well, apparently a majority of his colleagues feel that way. Listen, I think he should. I think that there are a couple of reasons. One is that it is clear he will no longer be able to be effective in the body for his constituents and as a United States senator when more than half of his own colleagues feel this way. And two, it's the right thing to do. And I can contrast the fact that over half of the Democratic Senate today has called on him to resign with the other piece of news from yesterday that President Trump endorsed Roy Moore for Senate, that the Republican National Committee is again funding his campaign down there. And this is someone who's against whom the allegations and the evidence are far stronger than what Senator Franken
okay, so
has
Paris,
been accused of.
Paris, take that up. Why the backing of Roy Moore?
Because he's the Republican nominee there, and the president believes that Roy Moore did not do these things, because that's what Roy Moore said he did not do. He denied them.
What about Jeff Flake's check that he wrote to Roy Moore's opponent saying country over party, country over party?
Senator Flake is someone whom I know, and I know that that's politics. That's what Jeff Flake is doing. He's playing politics. Period. Point blank, simple. The difference between Roy Moore and Al Franken is Al Franken has said that the things that he did actually occurred. Roy Moore has denied all of the claims. And so at some point you have to look at that and say, if this man is denying it, and if the people in the state are supporting him, then I'd rather have the Republican nominee who was elected by the people to be the nominee in there rather than have the Democrat in there who is not going to be supportive of the agenda to make America great again.
Okay. So Paris, is it
even possible that Roy Moore is just not telling the truth? I don't know why a denial equates to truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, you have to go by what people say. And
what about the women who have told you what happened to them?
Who have their yearbooks?
Absolutely, the women and they should go through the process of trying to rightly divide the word of truth, as the Bible says. So figure out what is true. That is up to Alabama to figure that out. But I tell you, when President Bill Clinton had all of those allegations coming up against him, no one was going and saying, "Well, let's believe the women." Nobody believed the woman, and he was the attorney general, the governor, and he was going to actually say in half a minute.
Make a right here. Mm. Here is the difference. And I think it's very clear, which is last week President Trump said that he wants Roy Moore in the Senate because he wants to get a tax bill passed. And at some point you have to ask yourself about a political party that's willing to overlook the kinds of things that Roy Moore has credibly been accused of
Last word, Anita Dunn, Democratic strategist, Paris Denard, Republican strategist. We need more time for this.
More time.
Thank you
more
both.
Time.
Thank you both.
Thank you.